Beautiful. If you're just joining us, we're in the WRTI Performance Studio with Simon Shaheen, who is playing live for us. He's playing the oud. Simon, maybe we should describe this beautiful instrument and talk a little bit about how it makes the sounds it does.
Yeah, the oud is the forerunner of the lute, the European lute, and it has the same shape. So it has the top, which we call the face, because it looks like a face, two eyes and one big mouth, right? And then you have the fingerboard, the short fingerboard with no frets like on the guitar. And this allows me to play those microtones that you heard even in this performance. And it has, the half pear round shape in the back. Then it has five double strings and one single. So the reason for the double strings is just for projection. So each two are tuned identically. And I use the pick that is made of animal horn or eagle feather sometimes, and to strum the strings.
Wow. Now, you mentioned microtones. Microtones are tones that we don't ordinarily hear in music, Western music.
Correct.
So, for example, on a piano, you have white keys and black keys, and these
Correct.
Microtones are somewhere in between.
Yeah, imagine like a red key between the white and the black. So when you press it, it gives you the intermediate sound between the white and the black. And this intermediate sound is part of the microtonal shades that are between white and black. Meaning that if you take two neighboring keys, white and black, there are several sounds in between them. In Arabic music.
Yes.
Or Turkish or Persian or...
And we're just not used to hearing them.
Not definitely. And this is what I use when I teach at Berkeley, I have violinists who are studying with me at Berkeley College of Music. I introduce them not only to what they call Western classical music. I wonder where this concept came from. Western classical music. But I also introduce them to, music of different parts of the world.
Yes.
East Europe, Egyptian, Indian, Latin, like South American. So, and each culture has its own unique sounds and unique vocabulary, if you will. So, including the microtones. It's very tough subject. They have difficulties listening to it, and of course, if I sing for you a note, you will repeat it perfectly right.
Yes.
Okay? But if we put the same note in the context of other sounds, this is where you lose it, because you are not used to the interval or the space between one note and another.
Wow. Well, I want to also mention that we are live on the air right now, but we are also streaming video live. So if you'd like to see this beautiful instrument, you can go to our website. There's a link that will take you to our YouTube video. Now, we also were talking about improvisation earlier before we started. There's a lot of improvisation in your music.
Yes, there is the pure art of improvisation. And there is also the improvisation as a concept, even in composed pieces, whether vocal or instrumental. Meaning that it's seldom that you listen to a traditional singer singing a song without improvising. You take a part and, part of a verse, and then you improvise, you elaborate on this verse.
Right, it's sort of like jazz.
Jazz, very much.
Okay.
Very much.
So you're about to play a piece. I have down here free improvisation, and you said you weren't sure what you were going to play. What are the factors that influence you?
Yeah, if we know what we are going to play, then why to call it improvisation, right? And the whole idea is that it is something that you come up at the moment of performance. And there are factors, for example, the choice of the mode, the style of the improvisation, the length. Is it 3 minutes? It's 4. Is it 15 minutes? is it half an hour? So improvisations could have different forms, different styles, different lengths.
Okay, well, right
I'll play something. You tell me how many seconds you wanted.
Have you made any of these decisions yet for this piece?
I mean, I don't know. The minute I put the oud on my right lap, I will. Here, let us try.
Okay. Thank you. That's great. If you're just joining us, we are in the WRTI Performance Studio with Simone Shaheen, who has just played an improvisation. That was really amazing, and you were clearly in a zone. I think I was getting into a zone, too. When you start improvising like that, do you start with an idea and then just see where the music takes you? Or are you consciously making choices the whole time?
No, you just let it flow. Because the minute, you know, you get into this choices mm-hmm. with options, then it's limitations.
Because you start thinking it too much.
It's too much. You just flow with it. And, of course, this reservoir of repertoire that you have in your brain mm-hmm. And the knowledge of the culture, the style, of course, it all pours into the artistry of improvisation. The ability, the technical and the musical ability on the instrument, of course, it helps much. Mm-hmm. So there are many factors. But the most important thing is the flow of the ideas and the concepts in a way that is very interconnected and makes sense. And it's musical, you know. It moves from black to white with lots of shades in between and very expressional, right. I would say.
Right. So it's something when you're learning, you just get better and better because your improvisation is informed by all that you know and have experienced. So when you went to New York, you mentioned you formed the Near Eastern Music Ensemble. And then since 1994, you've produced the Arab Festival of the Arts. What is the goal of that?
Yeah, it started in 1993.
Oh.
I started the festival partnership with the Brooklyn Museum in Brooklyn. And the idea was to have this festival for 2 or 3 days in which we introduce Arab arts from music to dance to theater to craftsmanships, children's programs. So many people came to see these programs. So, and it was an event that really had a mark on the artistic scene in New York. Even people started to come from all over the world to participate in this event. And it brought a great deal of awareness to what is considered Arab art.
Yes.
And, of course, we had so many talents here that needed to be introduced. So we utilized lots of the talents who lives in the United States, but they didn't have any venues to perform. We invited one or two artists from the Middle East or North Africa, and who were very well known and established to participate. And definitely this created a great deal, you know, at the festival. It was a big deal. So the festival was done at the Brooklyn Museum, and then later years we started to use the Brooklyn Museum and Town Hall in New York. So the final concert was at Town Hall in the city.
So when was that?
Several times.
Okay.
We did 1996, right. 7, 8, yeah. 9. Yeah. A big concert in 2004.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. And the next piece you're performing for us is by a Turkish composer.
Right. The composer is Neşdet Yaşar. I see why you didn't want to say the name.
You said it so perfectly.
And Neşdet Yaşar is a composer and tambur player. Tambur is a kind of long-necked lute mm-hmm. or oud with a smaller body. And he's considered one of the most known and, I would say, traditional Turkish musician. He established many ensembles. He composed. He established also the program of traditional Turkish music on the radio. which, you know, kept the tradition alive. And he composed this Sama'i. Sama'i is the name of the form. And the title and the mode that is this piece is based on called Nava Athar. To those who know music, it's like the harmonic minor with sharp four. This is the Berkeley style. And the Sama'i is based on a beat that is 10 beats per a measure. So you count from 1 to 10 to finish one measure. Okay? And it has four parts, each part followed by a refrain, a repeated refrain. Only the last part changes meter and rhythm from 10 to 6.
So the rhythm is very important. The 10 beats, I saw a video that you were talking about, 10 beats, but there's emphasis on 1, 6, and 7?
Correct. yeah, that's true. And you know when you have those... you know, elongated beats or rhythmic modes, we call them rhythmic modes or iqa, then you have to create the subdivision internally. Instead of counting from 1 to 10, you can count. The sama'i would be 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
So this helps the swinging and the phrasing, if you will.
Okay. Well, that's great.
Are we ready for it?
Yes, we're ready. You're listening to WRTI live from the WRTI Performance Studio. Thank you. Wonderful. If you're just joining us, we are in the WRTI Performance Studio with Simone Shaheen, who has been playing the oud for us. And Simone, you are here in Philadelphia to perform with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia, a concerto that you wrote for oud and orchestra. What was it like to do to combine those traditions?
Yeah, the work was commissioned by the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and we performed it for the first time in 2009. So, as I said, the focus here was the oud, and the oud is a traditional instrument. I did play oud with the string quartet. It works very well. I did the play in a fusion context. It worked very well. But then to come to an orchestra and big sound, then there was, many careful thoughts has to be considered there. First of all, the oud is not piano nor a violin that has this projection in terms of sound. So I have to think about balancing the sound. Create a nice balance between the oud and the orchestra. The second thing, the use of the maqam system or the modal system that we have with microtones, as I mentioned. This was something I tried to venture the use of the microtones even with the orchestra, but it was a very difficult job, because it requires a great deal of rehearsals and getting used to the fingerings and the sound. And we didn't have this luxury. So I limited the orchestra to what should be, and I played all these, varieties of modes. The second thing, the use of ornamentation. As you noticed, when you play, there is a great deal of ornament or embellishment that gives the music depth and beauty. And this is part of the performance also, the art of ornamentation. The third thing, the use of rhythms that are not in fashion in orchestral work. Let us say the use of 6 and 7 and 9 and 10, 11. You know, those rhythms, to venture, into the unknown, you can play a great deal, symphonies and compositions based on 4-4, that's nice. But then it would be also as interesting to venture into rhythms that are not in fashion. So this was another aspect that I included in the concerto itself.
Wow. So has the concerto evolved now to is it keep changing depending on the ensemble you're playing it with?
No, I mean the music is there, it's written, and but I change when I perform. Each time is a different performance.
Okay.
Because I do, phrasings, with different embellishments, sometimes the improvisational sections and so it changes, yes.
Well, a reminder to everyone that Simone Shaheen will be playing his concerto in C minor for oud with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia Sunday, May 19th. That's this coming Sunday at 2:30 p.m. and Monday, May 20th at 7:30 p.m. at the Kimmel Center. So thank you so much for coming and sharing your music with us today. What's the last piece you'll play for us?
We still have time. Okay. How about a light piece, like maybe a Lebanese folk tune?
Okay.
Right?
Thank you so much, Simone Shaheen. Live, you've been listening to WRTI, live from the WRTI Performance Studio. Simone Shaheen, thank you so much for visiting us, and good luck with your concerts with the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia this weekend.
Thank you so much.